Welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm talking to actor Vincent Ibrahim, who's currently appearing in The Jinns of Eadgar at the Royal Court Theatre. Welcome to Theatre Voice, Vincent.
Hello. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How did you get involved in this particular play?
Well, initially I did a reading of a draft probably about 2.5 years ago, about the fourth draft of the play. And we did it for an international festival of theatre writing from outside of the UK, basically. And Abhishek's play was one of a number of plays that was involved in this little festival and that we did a reading for. And then I didn't have any involvement in it until I was asked to perform the part of Dr. Baig, and that was in July sometime this year.
So this is a play by the Indian writer Abhishek Majumdar, which was part of the Royal Court's new writing season from India. It had a reading here in November of last year. Now it's arrived. I mean, it's a story.
It had a reading, yes. I understand that it had a reading, but it's had a couple of readings. I mean, we did a reading, as I say, 2.5 years ago, and it's had a further two since then, as is my understanding. But it's been in development for a number of years. I think this is the 14th draft.
Wow.
That we're on, yes.
Okay.
And while we were rehearsing, it went through a number of drafts as well.
Gosh, I hope we didn't see a draft. I hope we saw a fully-fledged
play. Oh, no, I mean, it's a fully-fledged play. What I mean by the draft, I mean that it's a, you know, it's certainly a work in progress. And even in rehearsal, things were changing, script things were changing on a daily basis once we'd got rolling.
Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about the play. It's called The Jinns of Eadgar, and it's written by Indian writer Abhishek Majumdar, and it's really about the human face of the insurgency in Kashmir, which has been going on off and on in 1989. You say you play a character called Dr. Baig, who is a
psychiatrist, who I think is based on a real-life character, or an amalgam of real-life characters, but certainly hospital of psychiatry in Srinagar is the only psychiatric hospital in the whole of the valley. I think the character actually says that in the play, with very few qualified psychiatrists operating in what is supposedly the most militarized zone on the planet. I mean, the Indian Army security forces in their various guises have at any one time 800,000 men stationed in Kashmir. So as a consequence of this of the insurgency and the conflict that has arisen, which stretches back a number of years, my history of it is a very immediate history because it came about as a consequence of doing some research in preparation for the play. So there were things about Kashmir that I had no idea about, including the fact that it was this most militarized zone. And as a consequence, the population, the citizenry, as well as the soldiers who are part of the occupational forces, are in a kind of war zone. So the play's subject matter is certainly about the effects of this occupation on the citizenry, but as well as the soldiers. I mean, in the play, the character, the central character of Ashrafi, who's...
This is the young girl who's mentally disturbed as a consequence of violence heaped on her father.
Yes, really. Yes. I mean, she witnesses her father being shot dead in a bus and is completely traumatized by this. Yes, a very tender little story, but resonant of what is going on in any war zone. I would imagine the same thing obtains in places like the Gaza Strip or the West Bank, or any situation in Syria, Lebanon, you name it. Northern Ireland springs to mind. It seems, as we were rehearsing, there were lots of parallels drawn, I guess, because in the UK, the situation in Northern Ireland is probably the closest to the idea of an occupation. Well, the British forces had occupied Northern Ireland, although, you know, Northern Ireland's part of the UK. There is a parallel to be drawn by an armed force being in a citadel that keeps the citizens under a certain amount of pressure.
But this play is not just a totally realistic play. It's got a mixture of this magic realism, you could call it that, and realism.
Yes, I'm not sure Abhishek would describe it as magical realism. Well, but yes, there is a level.
Mystical level to the play.
Certainly, a spiritual level to the play that I perhaps in Western society, we're not so, it's not such an accessible thing. Whereas my guess is, I've lived all my life in Western society, but my guess is that people live lives in which the spirituality, their spirituality, is a living thing. It's not something that is completely unfamiliar to them. I'm thinking of the idea of jinns. I remember from my childhood living in a very multicultural city, Cape Town, where there was a big Malay community, which was an Islamic community. The idea of jinns was always spoken about, and it was always about these fantasy figures. And people accepted them as part of everyday life. And I'm sure that the world of the play there is an indivisibility. It's not such a strange occurrence for a jinn to make an appearance. Because it seems to me part of people's...
But the jinn seems to be human beings who are slightly tortured by the effects of war in the context of this play, one of whom is your son character.
Yes.
I mean, and you as the doctor character is a very rational... What do you call yourself at the end of the play? There is the in-between or something?
We, the people of in-between, yes.
Yes. So... I find that quite an interesting argument as well within the story, that the jinns are, they're people, or they seem to be versions, well, he says it, doesn't it? Perfect versions of human beings.
Yes, pure passion.
Yeah.
In theological terms, jinns are a creation of Allah, that even before humans... The jinns were created, but it seems to me, in mythical terms, or in the spiritual life of that community, they represent pure passion, no reason, a human being's deepest felt desires. I was talking to somebody, a friend of my son's, who's busy doing a psychology course, and she said she read it on the level of that it represented the subconscious. And I thought that was an extraordinary perceptive way of making a reading of what is going on in that play, that what is happening in the subconscious is rising to the surface, as it were, to help people survive the mental assault that being in a war zone must necessitate.
But in terms of your character, you're playing like a Dr. Bake character, who is the rational psychiatrist trying to treat all these people who are suffering from the effects of war, and yet at the same time is a bit of a leader because he's been invited to the peace talks that we never see happen while the radical, inverted commas, elements would not like this to occur. I'm just wondering, do you play any other roles in the show? Like, are you any of those monk soldiers?
No. Dr. Baig is my singular role. So, I can sustain some kind of through line for the character.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a rationalist, but he's also a very spiritual being. I would say, to a certain extent, a devout Muslim. His beliefs and his rationality seem to be indivisible. Now, me personally, as an actor, as a person, I don't follow any religion.
Mm-hmm.
I was I was brought up in a religious household, but it was a Christian household. My grandfather was an Indian Muslim, but neither of those religions, other than my very childhood experience of being brought up in a Christian church, but neither of those religions carried on into my adult life. I would describe myself as a non-believer, but that doesn't mean I lack a spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And my connection with Dr. Bay is very much on a rational level, and yet I feel his spiritual pain. I mean, he's lost his son to the Mujahideen,
yeah.
And is tortured by whether that was a mistake that he'd made in his son's upbringing. He's always looking to himself because I guess he sees himself as a mentor who was meant to keep somebody as close as his own family on some path that would rationally keep them away from the influences of
radicalism,
a radical movement, and has failed because his son has crossed the border, trained in a camp, and come back with an extremely firstly, narrowed vision of how to deal with the insurgency, but a very necessary product of what is going on in that part of the world. And any part of the world that has a conflict, as in Kashmir.
We're sitting here at the Royal Court. I can hear planes. Are we near an aeroplane or something?
Well, I guess we're in West London and we're on a flight path to Heathrow.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Okay, yeah. Just to come back to him, I mean, I find his relationship. Dr. Baig's relationship with his nurse, Dr.
Wani,
played by
Asha Dhaka.
Mm. Yeah, very, very moving as well. And there are the...
Actually, she's not a nurse. She's a fellow
doctor.
Psychiatrist.
Yeah.
As he says to her, she is one of his students. And again, he feels, as the play develops, he feels a sense of betrayal because she is completely taken over by the fact that what she's doing as a psychiatrist is having no effect. It feels like it seems to her that they're fighting a losing battle, and that without some momentum to get rid of the armed
soldiers.
Occupation,
yeah.
That they will never find a solution to the mental health problems of the society. So she herself is torn, although she makes the decision that to leave the hospital, to pursue...
direct action.
Direct action, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Dr. Baig is appalled by this because it feels to him a betrayal of his sense of being able to mentor people like his students to be the healers and the doctors and follow up a completely rational path. And in his mind, that means a path which includes a conversation, a discussion, a conference with the Indians to resolve the differences. I was going to say he's an apolitical being, but he's not. I don't think he is. I think he is a being who seeks to find the path of reconciliation. Non-violence, if you like. He can't see that adding to a violent situation is going to resolve the issue.
So, I mean...
He believes in the possibilities of human beings being able to sit around a table. I think in some respects, possibly a little naive. However, or idealistic. However, without that, where do we go?
Mm.
In a conflict like that, where do we go? My own back... It rings great bells for me. My own father was a teacher and an artist in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
who began to become involved with politics before the 1994 elections in South Africa, which were the first democratic elections. My father was involved in a process of negotiation with the then apartheid regime,
mm-hmm.
because he felt that was the only rational way to go. People had to sit down and have a conversation. Otherwise, this issue would not be resolved. So, in many respects, my template for Dr. Baig and Dr. Baig's certainly his political stance has very powerful resonance for me in my father's own struggles to find a way to begin to resolve issues through conversation. Because my father was an optimist about the power of negotiation, the power of being, and it seems to me one has to be even more brave than being able to stand in front of in confrontation with the opposing forces with an equal amount of armament. You have to be even more brave to be able to lay all those things aside, sit down and have a conversation across the table. You have to take the strength of your convictions and place them in front of the opposition in order to find a way to negotiate a way through to whatever resolves that issue.
But in the play, we don't really get to see that. Because
we don't get to see that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a snapshot of different characters. Mm. The young siblings, the girl Ashrafi and her brother, the two soldiers, and... But it's a bit of a tragedy, isn't it? It really is a snapshot of the human tragedy of this whole insurgency.
I mean, for me, it's a tragedy of kind of Greek proportions.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? When I think of tragedy, I always think of Greeks or a Shakespearean tragedy. And in fact, the scale on which Abhishek has written this play certainly has ambitions to reach a kind of lyrical, poetical height, if you like, to be able to encompass the issues that arise out of an issue, a conflictual issue like Kashmir. I mean, it's of monumental proportions, and it should affect every human being on this planet. Because we're all involved. You know, somebody is going to know somebody who lives in Kashmir. Somebody's going to know somebody who lives in Palestine. Someone's going to know somebody who lives in Syria. But whatever, it has an impact on the society we live in, wherever we are. Lost my train of thought there. But it seems to me that Abhishek's play seeks to not to provide an answer, but to open the questions and open up the debates about how human beings seek to resolve those issues that divide them.
So let's just try and now talk a little bit more about the rest of your life in theatre to date. I mean, we're sitting here at the Royal Court, and I think that when you began your career, you might have begun it here with the Joint Stock Company. Am I right?
Like, well, it was certainly early on. It wasn't the start of right. my career, but when I did Borderline, Hanif Qureshi's play Borderline, I think it was around about 1980, early 80s, 81, 80 or 81.
Was the building the same? Is it different?
No, very different.
Weird coming back here. Are you a regular visitor to the court?
I'm a regular visitor as a theatre goer.
Oh, right.
As an actor, I've been this. I think this is my third or fourth visit. Borderline certainly was my first. Yes, I was a 30-year-old. So it's a good 30-odd years ago since Borderline, but. Borderline kind of represents for me the point at which I began to become involved in a movement in the theatre world in London and the UK, I guess, but London particularly because it's my home, which began to deal with the issues of the immigrant population of the UK, particularly the Asian community. And I guess that comes about because of the way I appear.
You've been saying you're from South Africa.
I'm from South Africa,
yeah.
But I'm of very mixed parentage.
Which is the mix?
My grandfather, my father's side is Indian.
Yeah.
His wife, my grandmother, my father's mother, is of mixed descent. On my mother's side, they're also of mixed descent. When I say mixed, I mean I'm talking about indigenous African as well as Afrikaner, as well as English, And I think there are some Germans thrown into the mix. Wow. So it's quite a...
You're a United Nations all by yourself, aren't you? So that's got you involved in the whole movement in terms of immigration politics in the UK with
look,
the joint stuff.
I think that kind of chose me. I didn't choose it.
Right.
It chose me. I've in my theatrical career in this country, I've played Palestinians, I've played Puerto Ricans, you name it, anybody with a swarthy complexion.
Well, it's interesting because you're working with a group of four or five actors who may be they're younger than you are.
Yes.
You know, I'm just wondering, when you sit in the dressing room and have a discussion about the journey of theatre, what do you discuss with them? You know.
Well, I mean, obviously we swap stories, but do you know, the new generation of actors, it seems to me, are perhaps unburdened by the immigrant experience. I'm talking about the kind of...
The politics of race?
The politics of race.
Or stuff like that, kind of, or what?
Well, I'm thinking of the kind of... The hard struggles that that actors of colour have had to endure in order to make something of their careers, to make their marks on the profession. I'm personally not such a forger of or a pioneer in that sense. By design, I don't consciously set out to do that. I'm very aware that throughout my career there have been landmarks, milestones, in which those things have become more and more important to me. And I'm thinking particularly almost 10 years that I spent with Tara Arts.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask you to just touch on that because you joined Tara.
In the early
90s, which was like the years where they explode the entire Western classical canon as
exactly
language of theatre, Binglish as it's
Jitinder Verma, who's the artistic director of Tara Arts, is when I met him. And I have to say, in the initial years, it was a struggle for me because I was finding my way to attempting to be an actor that operated in my skin. And by that I mean feeling very comfortable and at home with the work that I was doing, the characters I was playing. Jitinder offered me, as an actor, the ability to play very strong roles. Jitinder was in the process of adapting classics, the Greek classics, French...
Tartuffe,
Bourgeois Gentilhomme, some Shakespeare... adapting it with a particular slant, giving it some, building a bridge between a South Asian culture and a modern, sophisticated UK, but particularly London culture.
So that doesn't mean that
I'm not implying that the South Asian culture is unsophisticated, but there are two very sophisticated cultures that he was attempting to meld to provide in its synthesis some kind of representation of a migrant's experience in.
Was it also a time when Tara was trying to create an idea of a rep company as well? So something like you yourself. Shelley King. Yogesh Bhatt. I don't remember. Ayub was there for a while.
Paul Bhattacharjee.
Yeah, now late, sadly.
Yes.
You know. Yeah. So, but was it an idea of trying to create a company of actors?
Well, in the sense that we worked together for quite a few years.
Without falling out.
Well, I wouldn't say we never fell out.
Right.
I'd say there were lots of struggles and artistic churnings that went on in creating these pieces. But the point I wanted to make was that I felt like I had come home, and I said this to Jitinder after a few years. It felt like I'd come home. I didn't have to explain myself endlessly to my colleagues or a theatrical establishment explain myself in the sense of having to give my life history and my ethnicity and in order to forge some kind of creative relationship. At Tara, I felt like that was taken for granted. My experience as an immigrant was being tapped at first hand, at source, as it were, whereas my experience before with Joint Stock, with the RSC, the Young Vic, I'd worked there before I came to work with Tara, I always felt like the outsider. And look, that's a state of mind that I think for me as an immigrant was my own. Something I had to deal with. Coupled with the fact that I was in a culture that I was forging some kind of relationship with. And now 30 odd years on, I feel very comfortable in that in the multiplicity of identities that I've been able to forge as an actor, because it gives me a very handy tool bag. I feel very equipped to deal with whatever would be thrown at me as a challenge that would be thrown at me as an actor.
Well, it's interesting. With Tara, you've been on at least three shows that were on at the National Theatre.
Yes.
Was it Tartuffe, Cyrano?
Cyrano and The Little Clay Cart.
Yes, all in the 90s. And now that the National Theatre is celebrating its 50th birthday, I am wondering if you've been invited to the balls.
Well, I haven't gone out and bought a ball gown, and neither have I found a pair of glass slippers. But was it a glass slipper that Cinderella wore?
Yeah, she did.
Yes. And I'm sure that I could find a pumpkin that will change into a coach. I have been sent an email that says that notifies me that it's on, but I haven't been invited to any specific.
Well, you have to buy a ticket for the party. That's what it is.
I guess that's we're in the age wrought by Thatcher that even for your invitation you have to pay for it.
But it's more about, you know, I'm sort of also jesting, but you know, it's 50 years old, and there's been a lot of Asian work there. There's been a lot of black work over the years. It's a theatre that reflects the nation in its title, and one is curious in that sense, you know. But
look, as an actor, I've had some very good experiences at the National. I think my first experience at the National was not with Tara, but was with their Fan Shen, yes, which was then their, I forget what they called it, but it was the touring section of their company. And Fan Shen, I loved Fan Shen. It was one of, I think it's a David Hare play from Joint Stock days that was remounted at the National. And it was astonishing then, I'm trying to remember when, I think it was around about 1984, somewhere around there. And it was astonishing how relevant it was. The remount was still, there were still resonances. You know, I think it was when Joint Stock, it came out of a period of time when companies like Joint Stock were defining their collective socialist identity. So Fan Shen, about the Chinese communist revolution, seemed to be such a resonant piece. And it, in the 80s, when it was remounted, it had a further resonance. And then we took it to Israel. And that was, I guess that my memory of it was, we took it to Israel. And there was such a strong kind of visceral response to it, both in praise of it, as well as, you know, what's this play doing here? What's it got to say to us? And that there seemed to be a generational gap. Obviously, the older generation seemed not to be able to see the connections between the struggles of Chinese peasantry, and not to be able to see any kind of resonance with what was going on in the West Bank and Gaza, whereas younger Israelis, who are far more open-minded about the struggles of the Palestinians, clicked with the piece immediately. So we had a little entourage of groupies who followed us around from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Jerusalem and came to see the play on a number of occasions, and we got into extraordinary conversations. And that's where, for me, the power of theatre begins to blossom, is that when a play achieves some kind of universality, and I think coming back to Abhishek's play, that's a play that I feel has such a resonance.
Well, I'm glad you've raised that, because I feel it's the kind of play that should be seen in sort of Asian-specific type venues, as well as being somewhere like the Court.
But you see, I think a place like the Court, to use a terrible pun, it should court an audience that and it's possible. I'm sure it's possible, and the Court has done it before. I remember with Borderline.
But it's a very short run. You're on at the upstairs only till the 9th of November. You know, yes. It's a very short run.
It would be lovely to have, say, a remount in the main house, given that the play seems to be able to take that amount of if you put it in a larger space, I think it would fit very comfortably into a large space like the main house at the Court. And do extremely well.
Well, let's hope Vicky Featherstone is listening.
Vicky, I think, Vicky is the kind of person, I think she has such a warm and generous, her regime here seems to have kicked off with such a warm and generous spirit. I'm very confident that, who knows what life the Jinns of Eagar might have, but it feels to me, and I have a suspicion that maybe it's because she's a woman, and I'm maybe talking out of school here, but sometimes I felt that the regimes at places like the Royal Court or the National Theatre or the RSC, there's an aloofness about the regime which I don't feel here at the Court, which for me as an actor is incredibly confidence giving. Do you know what I mean? It extends a very welcoming hand to plays like Jinns of Eagar.
Can I just ask you one more question? Of course, you are now known to a whole new generation of people thanks to your character of Mr. Ashwin Kumar in the Kumars at number 42.
Yes.
Which was a stroke of luck, as I understand it.
Yes,
I don't know
yes.
how you met Sanjeev Bhaskar.
I met Sanjeev at Tara Arts, and we did a workshop together. We were never in a play together, but years after I'd left Tara, two or three years after, he came and tracked me down because he was mounting a workshop for the Kumars. I was very, very chuffed and very flattered because I hadn't done any television before. And Sanjeev really kind of fought my case in front of a bunch of TV execs who were saying, well, this man hasn't got any TV experience, you know, blah, blah, blah. And yes, we got seven series of the Kumars as a consequence, and I loved it. I was exploiting a part of my acting ability that possibly I didn't know existed. That's comedy, a bit of comedy. Yeah. You know. Although I have to say, I think, you know, the line between comedy and tragedy is a very thin one. For me, it's the truth of the character, and if the character is comfortable, you know, I'm talking about Ashwin Kumar, you know.
Yes, but he's going to come back, isn't he, now?
Yes, yes. We're about to dive into rehearsals.
Well, that should be fun, so we look forward to that on Sky at some point.
It's set to be sometime in the new year.
Right, okay, but I have to say, thank you for talking to Theatre Voice. It's been really enjoyable, Vincent, just to hear a little bit about your theatrical journey.
My pleasure.
Thank you.